All right, guys, I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. And we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 20 today. Now, Mark only has 16 chapters, and so we're getting to a point where he wants to show us some things, help us to understand what's been happening so far. And what he's been focusing in on is how people respond to things. So up to this point, when we've gone through the first three chapters, we've seen a lot of responses to Jesus. We've seen people who are excited about him, they want to follow him. We've seen people who just come to him because they know what they can get from him. Usually that's healing or having a demon cast out of them or something. But we've also seen people who just flat out don't like him. They're not happy with Jesus or the reality of what Jesus can do, especially what he can do, because he doesn't do it their way and they know better. Okay? And so we're seeing all of these different responses. So it's interesting, when we come to chapter 4, we're going to focus in on verses 1 to 20, he's going to give us a parable. Now, a parable is a story that Jesus told. He tells a lot of them. Some are big, some are small, that convey a spiritual truth. But you may not necessarily know that when you read it. And he spoke a lot in parables. He's going to explain why he does that here in a moment. But with that, he's going to talk about how people respond. Okay, how people respond. So the first thing, before we look at the passage, I just want to give you a couple of thoughts about the nature of a response. Okay? The nature of a response. Because we might think, you know, if I ask you a question, everybody says, "Yeah, there's my response. Here's what I'm doing. I make this commitment," or whatever. You give a response. Well, that's in the moment. But really, if you want to know about the nature of response, you really need to go a little bit deeper than that. So let's think about a couple things here, first of all. Here's the first one. A response isn't always a true response. What? A response isn't always a true response. Now, do you understand what I'm saying? Let me give you an illustration. So, I've been here 25. So, about 30 years ago, I was pastoring a church. We had a situation where an individual had hurt someone, and there was a confrontation where both parties were there. And the one party who did the action gave a response, and it appeared to be like repentance. There was sadness, there was grief over what had happened. And so there was this initial response of wanting to say, "Yes, I did it. I'm wrong," whatever. And so normally what we do in Christian circles is to say, "Whoa, okay, everything's great now." The person responded, and they responded in an affirmative way. Everything should be okay now. But what I'm going to tell you is, and you know this from your lives, a response isn't always a true response. Because you could say something in the moment, and it's the moment that's dictating what you need to say. It doesn't necessarily mean that you say it, right? This is reality. Just responding doesn't mean to be that you're truthfully coming across. In fact, that's my second point I want you to see here. Time reveals the true nature of a response. Time reveals how you truly respond. So let me go back to my illustration. So 6 months later, after this great meeting and so forth, I'm having a conversation with the individual, and it's becoming very clear that that response that he gave was only because he got his hand caught in a cookie jar. And Mama was getting ready to swat it with a ruler. Now, trust me, it wasn't over cookies. I'm just using that to get you to understand. Do you understand? But then his true response was revealed by a lack of care and a lack of concern for the individual who was hurt. So what was the deal with the first response? It was a response, but it wasn't a true response. So what has this got to do with what we're talking about here, George? Well, Jesus, I think it's interesting. Here we are, we're going into the fourth chapter, the story of him. This, what he's about to share, is shared in three of the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They all share this story. Because in this story, he's going to talk about how people respond to him. Because, by the way, are people responding to him? Okay, are they affirmative, except for the ones that don't like him? Are most of them affirmative about who Jesus is? Yeah. But the reality is that not every response is necessarily the right response. And that's going to be very important for you and I, because especially when we talk about faith and especially when we talk about Jesus and what we want from him and who he is and what he has impact in our life, it's really a time for us to reflect upon, so what is my response to him? How am I responding to him? So let's take a look at the passage. Here's what he writes, Mark, as he shares with us this incident from Jesus' life. Again, he began to teach beside the sea, and a very large crowd gathered about him, so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea, and the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land. He was teaching them many things in parables, and in his teaching he said to them, "Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Some seed fell on the rocky ground, where it did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up, since it had no depth of soil. When the sun rose and it was scorched, since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And the other seed fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And he said, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." And when he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked about the parables. And he said to them, "To you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside, everything in parables, so that they may indeed see, but not perceive, and may indeed hear, but not understand, lest they should turn and be forgiven." And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? How then will you understand all the parables? The sower sows the word, and these are the ones along the path where the word is sown. And when they hear it, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word that is sown in them. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground, the ones when they hear the word immediately receive it with joy. And they have no root in themselves, but endure for a while. Then when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away. And others are the ones sown among thorns. They are those who hear the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires of other things enter and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. But those that were sown on good soil are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. All right, so let's take a look at this. We're going to try and learn some things. And from this, we're going to evaluate ourselves. Okay? We're going to evaluate ourselves. Because here's the thing. I want you to think back. A response isn't always a true response. Do you understand? We're going to talk about what that means as we get through this passage. First thing I want you to understand is this. When we talk about the parables, I want you to focus in, first of all, how Jesus prepares us to understand what's happening, verses 10 through 13. The first thing I want you to notice is that Jesus taught in a manner that allowed his teachings to be interpreted in various ways. That's why he's using parables. Look with what he says in verses 10 through 12. He says this. And when he was alone, and those around him with the 12 asked him about the parables, and he said to them, "To you has been given the secret of the kingdom, but for those on the outside, everything in parables, so that they may indeed see but not perceive, may indeed hear but not understand, lest they should turn and be forgiven." So the reality is that when he teaches and when he's giving instruction, some people understand it, and there's others who don't have any clue. What was he saying? What did it mean? You've seen that in life, haven't you? Years ago, I used to listen, because I'm a news junkie. So years ago, it's got to be more than 10 years ago now, 15 years ago. I used to listen to NPR in the office, okay? Afternoon, listening to the afternoon news and everything. And they do interviews, and they interview a lot of different people. And I remember them interviewing a lawyer, I forget what organization he was from. He was not a Christian. He didn't claim to be a Christian. But he said something that really piqued my interest. He said, "I've read the Bible." And I thought, this is interesting what he's going to say here. He said, "I've read the Bible from cover to cover because I keep hearing about why it's important to read the Bible." And the person who's interviewing him said, "So what did you conclude?" He said, "I don't have a conclusion. I couldn't understand anything I was reading." And here's what I thought. That's a truthful response. Because you can read it, but not perceive it. You can read it and not understand it. Do you understand what I'm saying? To some, it doesn't make any sense. Who's the one who gives you understanding and perception? God's Spirit, right? And he does that for his children. Jesus is teaching in such a way so that people will understand what he's trying to convey with the truth. But then there are others, they're going to say, "Well, that's a really nice story. Kind of weird, though. Why did he share that?" So this is what he's saying about these parables. Here's the second thing I want you to see. When Jesus taught in such a way that kept some ignorant, he was willing to explain. While he did that, he was willing to explain what he's saying. What do you mean, George? He taught in a way so that there were some people would have no clue. But I want you to understand, he was willing to what? Explain it. So it's not like he's cold-hearted, he's keeping people in the dark. No, if you really want to know, you just ask him and he'll tell you. So here he's got this interesting parable. He's got this guy who's out sowing seed. Okay, now we're kind of familiar with that because right now it's planting season, right? Or we've gone through planting season. And you drive by some of the fields around there and you'll see them out planting the various ways that they do it now. And you see them out there sowing seed. Well, he gives this story about this guy going and sowing seed. And it's kind of like Lori and I just sowed. We had an area where we used to have a pool and we got some dirt brought in. And Lori said we need to spread some grass seed. And so she has this machine where I've got this grass and I'm just turning the handle and it's scattering seed everywhere. Now, the seed is going where we want it to go, but it's also going in places where we don't want it to go. Okay? Because you're just going and you're sowing seed. I'm up there twirling around and it's sowing places. So he says, some of it fell among the stony soil and birds ate it. Which, by the way, my wife says, we've got to cover this up so the birds don't come and have a feast. And then some fell among shallow ground. Some fell among thorny ground. And then there's good soil. And so he's giving this illustration. And they all relate to it, but he's not making a point. Not that you can see, obviously, on face value with the parable, right? And so they're all sitting there wondering, what does this mean? And so He's willing to explain it, and so here's the explanation that he gives. It's really about the responses to him or to his word. So that's what we're going to focus on the rest of our time together. What I want you to notice now is the responses. Here's the first one. Look with me at verse 15. And these are the ones along the path where the word is sown. When they hear it, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word. So, takes away the word that is sown in them. Jesus' teaching makes no impression on some people. You understand that, right? This is the thing you guys have to understand, is that not everybody is going to be impressed with your Jesus. Not everybody's going to be interested in what you're excited about. Because people will be excited about, God answered this prayer, God did this for me, and this comes out of them naturally. And then what you find is there are some people that are like, oh yeah, I'm interested, but then there are other people like, I ain't got time for this. I've got other things going on. They just don't care. I just want you to understand that. There is a segment of our society that couldn't care less. Jesus is saying that. Satan has come for whatever reason, and he is the god of this world, and he has distracted them, or whatever he's doing, he's keeping them from letting the word have any root in their life, and they just don't care. That's a response, isn't it? In fact, some of you would say, well, that's not a response. They're not responding. No, a no response is a response. Do you understand? A no response is a response. And they don't care. And sadly, for some of them, they'll never care. And so he's saying, the sower goes out, sows the seed, sows the word, and some people look at that and it makes no impression on them. So listen, don't sit there. And here's the thing, maybe I should say this to you. I've met so many people who've told me that they've shared their faith with others and they think there's something wrong with them because the way they present it, the other person doesn't care. The other person isn't interested. The other person rejects what they're saying. So they think there must be something wrong with my presentation. Here's what I'm going to tell you. No, there's nothing wrong with your presentation. It's not you. It's just they don't care. It's not you. There are just some people who don't care. They're not interested in your Jesus. They're not interested in what God's doing in your life. Understand that. Don't be defeated by that. You have nothing to do with why they react. It's not you. You're just sharing the word like you're told to share, right? So Jesus' teaching makes no impression on some people. We got to understand that. And we're living in a world where things are changing so much where most people don't really care. Now we're going to get into another two groups of people here, the next two groups, the next two soils, where we do see this happen. We actually see them come to church. What do you mean? Well, look with me, verse 16 and 17. Here's the next one. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground, the ones who hear, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with joy. They have no root in themselves, but endure for a while. Then when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately fall away. Here's what I want you to see. Jesus' teachings are embraced with enthusiasm until life's challenges arise. Ever seen that one? You see people, they listen to your invitation and they come to the service and they're like, man, wow, that was a great service. I enjoyed the music and the people were really friendly and accepting and they're all excited about Jesus in their life and they say, I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to do whatever. And they're excited for the moment. But then as soon as something happens, and by the way, that phrase, as soon as something happens, is a true phrase that always happens. Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, life's not without problems, right? So as soon as something happens, they're gone. Because they're disappointed. And they'll say things like, well, you know, I was really excited about Jesus, but then this problem came, and he didn't do something for me. He didn't answer my prayer. He didn't keep this problem from happening. And they leave. This is the ground, that the seed that is sown on stony, on shallow ground where the roots come, but there's no roots in their life. They never grew. They never grew in their faith so that when the first problem comes along, if it's severe, and that's the problem, if it's severe, they're out of here. And they're the ones that say, well, you know, I tried that Christianity thing. I tried that. In fact, someone told me if I get saved, everything will be okay. You ever told somebody that? Quit telling them that. Quit it. Because the reality is if they get saved, it ain't going to be okay. It's actually going to be worse. Because now they have a bullseye on their chest or on their back. And problems will arise, right? And so to test our what? Faith. But here's the thing. When this difficulty and this struggle happens, when that takes place, people are like, I'm out of here. I'm done. And we've seen that, right? As I'm saying that, some of you are naming people in your mind that as soon as it got too much, they were gone. How could a good God who loves me let that happen? How could a good God who cares for me let this difficulty or let that problem or let that do this to my loved one or something? See, that's a response. There was the initial, but time revealed, right? Time revealed when there was a problem. Now there's a third group, and I've seen this one too. You have as well. Look with me in verses 18 and 19. And others are the ones sown among thorns. They are those that hear the word, but the cares of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfruitful. I've seen this so many ways. I've seen it from folks sitting in the pew to people who stand in a pulpit. This is the folks, here's the point I want you to see. Some accept Jesus' teaching, but their own desires quickly overwhelm them. You've seen it. They come to Jesus and are excited about Jesus, but the desires of the world, what the world has to offer them. Now, what does the world have to offer them? We don't need to spend much time, but success, money, power, prestige. We can keep going on, right? Stuff. And then they become consumed with what? Acquiring. And I've seen this from folks sitting in the pew to people who've been in a pulpit. And they showed a response of faith, but then when the success came, it destroyed them. This is the reality. Their desires quickly overwhelm them. And I've seen them. I've had them talk to me. I've had them say to me, I understand this Jesus thing, but I want this. And it's usually someone else or something else. So therefore, they decide to what? Walk away. Because there was something else that somehow it got choked out, their faith got choked out to where the something else was more important than Jesus. And it's a whole category of people. Money, prestige, power. I've already mentioned all those things. It's our desires become so uncontrolled, they overwhelm our faith. Wow, looked at three responses here, haven't we? The ones who don't really care. The ones who maybe care for a moment, they're excited, but then the difficulties come and they're like, I'm done with this, I'm out of here. And then there's those that respond well, but then when stuff comes up that maybe will enrich them in some way, they choose that over what? Faith. Faith in Jesus. That's pretty depressing, George. Yeah, well, he did say there was one other soil. Look with me at verse 20. Here's what he says. But those that were sown on good soil are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. Some embrace Jesus' teaching and allow it to impact their lives. This is a good response. This is the response where they hear the word, they respond to it, and then they allow that word to produce change in their life. Change. Where they produce fruit in their life. Now, what's fruit? That's character development. This is where you become a different person. You know, I understand it's out there, it's even in our community. People will say, well, God wants you to be healthy and wealthy, and he'll bless you if you have a lot of faith. That is a bunch of baloney. Because remember, we just had folks who pursued that, and they gave up on their faith, right? It was choked out because of that stuff. Here he's saying it produces fruit in their life. Now, if you want to understand fruit, go to Galatians chapter 5, where we see the fruits of the Spirit, where he produces character, love, joy, peace, and so forth in our lives. We become like him. We change into people that he wants us to be. And he does. We change. That's the fruit he produces. And hopefully he's producing that in your life because you allow it to. You hear and you allow it to take root in your life and it changes you. Now, I've told you I've been a believer now 41 years. And I think back to the old George. The old George was a miserable piece of work. The old George was selfish. Couldn't care less about anybody but himself. But 40 years on, from that time when I realized who Jesus was and I followed him, he has changed me. I used to be a critical person. I'm not that critical anymore. He changed me. Is he changing you? Are you different because of him? You should be. So where are we going with this, George? Well, here's what I want you to see. I want you to understand, okay? Go back to what I originally started out with. Not every response is a true response. And only time reveals the level of response that you have. Because some of you will say, well, I remember when I was 5 years old, I prayed a prayer and gave my life to Jesus, and I made a response to him. I understand, but was that a true response? Because time reveals whether that's true or not. Because you could say you did that at 5 years old, but right now you're living like you don't even know Jesus or care less about Jesus. Time reveals what your response is. What kind of response are you giving? And then he's given us four different types of responses here with this parable. And I think it's interesting. At this point in the gospel, he's wanting to make a point. Are you the ones who really couldn't care less? Hopefully that's not true because you're here this morning, right? But maybe you're the one who's excited about Jesus for a moment until the problems happen and then we're not going to see you anymore. Or maybe you're the ones who are excited about Jesus, but then, man, Boy, having stuff would be a whole lot better. And having prestige and power. Or are you the kind of person that responds and you allow him to change you and produce fruit in your life? Multiple fruits. Some 30, 60, and 100-fold. See, the only one who's going to know the response to that question is you. Even your spouse doesn't know that, where you're really at. We can't judge each other, can we? We can't judge anything about ourselves. We can only know our own hearts, which, by the way, Jeremiah makes it very clear that our hearts are deceitful and wicked. Thanks, Jeremiah. But that's true. So how are you responding to him? How is he changing you? Something to think about.